Now, it is impossible for the physical organs of vision, or the mind of the physical, to form a perfect mental picture of Kansas City, but the celestial eye or mind is capable of vision of so much greater magnitude that, when it forms comparisons in relation to size or dimensions, it sees whatever it describes in its complete size. In the physical body, some people are enabled to behold more perfect expressions of size than others. The size of the eye has nothing to do with this. It all lies in the development of the optic nerve. The minds of very few people have ever been awakened to the fact that by practice they can enlarge the scope of their vision so as to bring objects that are 4 blocks away to as perfect a range with their sight as those but 1 block away. When one can analyze this fact, he is enabled to form some idea as to how the powers of vision may be hundreds of times greater in a celestial being than in a physical one. Consequently, to be enabled to cast the vision over a range of country the size of Kansas City is not such a difficult feat, after all, to a celestial being, nor is a temple of the size mentioned anything extraordinary to those who dwell in the regions of the Most High. The temple of godly power contained sublime conceptions of the gods of power, many realms higher than those through which the celestial travelers were now passing. How weirdly fascinating things were, and in sonic cases almost incomprehensible. Yet these celestial travelers realized that as they evolved in higher consciousness they would be enabled to behold mighty conceptions of the godly powers to which they were as those blind at this particular time. For, after they had beheld the mighty works of 12 different gods and passed up into the 13th circle of godly power, they could sense something more wonderful than anything with which they had yet come in contact. But they could not behold it. It seemed as though in less than a moment they had been transplanted to realms so exalted that they were too sacred for anything but the touch or the presence of the divine. They had experienced often that peace which passed understanding, but never in the wonderful way of which they were conscious at this time. Now did they see, not with their eyes, their minds, or their sixth sense alone, but with a new vision, which seemed deeper than any of which they had before been conscious. They were apparently in this temple of godly power, yet at the same time they stood face to face with gods and rulers who were at that time in their own realms from 1 to 15 degrees higher than God's kingdom, the realms through which they were now passing. And they were in perfect touch with these beings, who were of glorious and exalted form, and I may say of different form from any upon which the celestial travelers had ever before looked. They themselves seemed to have been changed during the period when the wonderfully exalted feeling came over them, for, behold, as they looked at one another and at themselves, they realized that they had forms more glorious and beautiful than anything they had ever imagined, and they communed with one another and with the exalted ones mentioned, not with the celestial voice, not with the unfolded mind, nor the senses, but with a new consciousness which have never before been awakened, the same consciousness with which they beheld gods and rulers of the 15th kingdom. The beloved guide and teacher who was ever near these celestial travelers to assist and teach them, revealed to them that, through a special dispensation from beings very exalted, they had been taken through an experience never before given to one who had been in the immortal world for less than 200 years. A great and mighty power had been exercised over them, and parts of their beings had been quickened and unfolded until they stood forth in the forms they would wear in the far distant future, hundreds or perhaps thousands of years to come. They communicated in a new language that was wonderfully sweet and musical. In the new language their names were Elo, Vena, and Kmane, this being the translation as near as can be given in English words. They were not so changed, however, that they ceased to think of the one to whom they were to first impart the news of their remarkable trip. The temple of godly power was formed of a substance resembling amethyst stone. It was not stone, however, had a form of electric crystals of a different nature from anything on earth or in heaven. Beautiful plants and flowers grew in the air, and there were flower gardens around on the outside of the building at intervals. Flowers resembling golden white orchids were festooned about the pillars of the building, adding beauty to the grandeur of the perfect scene. The atmosphere was charged with a peculiar element of force that gave forth the sound of delicate tinkling bells. At length the celestial travelers found themselves in a large hall in the part of the temple of godly power known as the Supreme Arch of Para. Para was the god of the region known as the Kingdom of the Blessed, but this particular part of the Kingdom of Godly Power represented him and his work. The ceilings and walls of this great hall sparkled as though literally encrusted with jewels. The jewels were ethereally ed globules of the highest form of electricity. A light which changed color rapidly filled the great room or auditorium, and in the course of a few moments it was flooded with a golden light so powerful that even the beings assembled there, who were used to marvelous demonstrations, could not face the brightness and the power manifested. At the same instant, every sphere in the infinite world was suddenly made radiant with a light whose magnitude had never been demonstrated in such a powerful way. The time had come for each ruler of every sphere and kingdom of the infinite world to become a leader of a realm still higher than the one in which he was then reigning. The hour had come for the beloved Ozean, the divine ruler of the spheres, to receive new degrees and to become rulers of realms higher than those over which they were then reigning. The ceremony which would exalt 10 rulers would be held first in this temple of godly power and then in each realm above God's kingdom up to the 10th. The celestial traveler known as Rose the Sunlight would behold this wonderful ceremony twice, as she was to pass up into the kingdom of the blessed to behold still greater wonders than she had yet witnessed. Suddenly the great auditorium of the temple seemed to become enlarged. Its magnitude was stupendous before, but nothing compared to its present dimensions. It was still so brilliant with powerful light that it was impossible to see what was unfolding or developing beyond the area of the light. Now there was a hush, as though the supreme powers of the universe were conferring together, and then there burst upon the vision a scene of magnificence that hath never been revealed to spiritual or physical eyes alone. The fact that it was a real scene and not a representation or spectacular entertainment made it seem even more grand and beautiful than it would otherwise. At 29, having to behold great numbers of rulers and gods clothed in a light so powerful that chemists of mighty wisdom had to stand between them and the celestial travelers to keep the latter from being absorbed in the universal, so great was the power of attraction between the atoms. Think of it, you who read this article, a gathering of the gods who, in a spiritual sense, have dominion over the terrestrial and celestial worlds. As these great beings assembled together, with the light of a still higher power shining on them and radiating from them, the strains of creation's mighty hymn were heard to vibrate from the distance, and then in a burst of rapturous, glorious music flood the great hall with melody that was certainly height for gods to listen to. There was no evidence of the source whence the music came, although it was understood by those present to have been vibrated there by great powers of mightier magnitude than those who had assembled to bestow power as well as to accept it, for the ruling god of a certain universe, a kingdom, or of united spheres, would bestow his power upon the reigning god below him, while he in turn would be, taken up into the next degree of power by the god above him. These great beings stood about 4 feet above a circle of blue, white, and red light. The celestial travelers felt more than honored to think they had been privileged to witness such a scene. They were particularly interested, however, in 5 of the company who were to advance higher to realms of realization and power. One of the celestial travelers had met them upon a previous trip to God's kingdom. These 5 beings were the beloved Hosea, the supreme divine ruler of the spheres, Sewin, the great Olzen, and the godlike Jehovana. As these great personages stood forth in all their grandeur, with the radiance from powers still greater shining upon them, the 3 celestial spectators gazed upon the scene with consciousness uplifted as never before. The radiance seemed to grow more intense and powerful until the mighty enclosure was seen to be in a perfect blaze of light, a light not to be compared with any these spectators had ever witnessed in realms below. Again there was silence for a moment, and it seemed as though these great beings were receiving a benediction from on high, for they bowed their forms while a shower of still more powerful electric vibrations played over them. Then a great voice in the mighty avalanche of sound spoke these words in the language of realms still farther removed in space, "Sons of eternal power, gods of force, expressions of the infinite, whom it hath pleased your creators to honor upon this auspicious occasion, lift up the glory of your countenances and the consciousness of your exalted beings, for the combined strength of all powers of the infinite world rests upon you in this." the hour of your supreme transfiguration. The powers of the infinite world enjoin you, O triumphant ones, to receive the exaltation meted out to you in its perfect fullness. Gods of eternity proclaim the righteousness and wisdom of infinitude's great work unto all beings amenable to your mighty power. Look over, beyond, and upward toward those star-crowned heights, where pulsate the eternal springs of almighty power and infinite grace. Hearken unto the call, ye watchful ones, drink in the power until your beings throb and quicken with the realization of your own godliness and with the wonder of your triumphant beings. Oh, the glory that shall encompass you around in the expression of all your works. Oh, the power that shall go forth, even unto the smallest corner of the earth. Thy humanity shall learn to say, life is strong and the mercy of God endureth forever, even unto the day which no eye hath yet seen, for the glory and triumph of great wisdom shall become revealed in the manifestation of its works. Rise up, ye gods of men and eternity. Behold the torch of flame which lights the way, even unto the darkened souls of them who walk in the shadow of ungodliness and whose feet are torn by the thorns of ignorance and unrighteousness. Rise up in all your power. The day is one of glory, and the sun sets not for him who is encompassed round about with the everlasting arms of infinite God, power. O you exalted ones! More glorious and far-reaching shall be your reign since you have felt the kindling glow of the gods who have called you to arise and cast the foci of your visions far out over the endless sweep of creation's realms. Hearken unto the voice which saith unto you, come up higher. There is a grander work, a broader expanse in the great sea of infinitude. 3. The voice ceased to vibrate, and there played over these great personages a wonderful display of light and color. Their forms seemed to grow more ethereal, and the power that vibrated from every part of their beings was sufficient to thrill with wonder the celestial travelers who were privileged to witness the glory of it. Never had they beheld anything to compare with it in point of grandeur or solemnity. After the great voice had ceased to vibrate, each great personage came forth and stood under an arch of golden light to receive individually the blessings of the higher powers and to have conferred upon him the honors which until now had belonged to Teve one above him in power. How gloriously beautiful and how mighty appeared the divine Jose in his garments of light while receiving his degrees of power from the supreme divine ruler of the spheres. He requested the celestial traveler known as Rose the Sunlight to stand beside him while this great ceremony was going on. Words would be inadequate to express the feeling that came over her. Events that had transpired in her life that she had before tried in vain to solve were made clear to her now. She saw herself as she had been, as she was then, and as she would be at a time not far distant in the future. She saw herself stand beside the one who was about to be made supreme divine ruler of the spheres, and she was clothed in garments of light and a crown of light appeared upon her head. She saw the new body that had been given her, and was conscious of the great magnitude of power by which she was surrounded. For a moment she was conscious of the power of gods beyond those she could see with her newly awakened vision. Then she was again standing with the two celestial companions who had traveled with her to God's kingdom. Then appeared the mighty Avanan, a being of majesty and power, the supreme divine ruler of the kingdom of the blessed and master of the 253rd degree. The brilliancy, 35, of his garments and the power that emanated from him showed him to be a supreme master of power. He was fair in complexion, with a glorious head crowned with a profusion of white wavy hair, hair not gray, but naturally white. His eyes were like deep purple stars, and as he spoke it was as though his voice vibrated from far, distant realms in space. He was master of ceremonies, and conferred the 254th degree upon the supreme divine ruler of the spheres. Streams of pale golden silver light radiated from his hands and person and vibrated toward the great ruler. The great ruler held out his hands toward the beloved Jose and the beloved Jose vibrated his power toward the great Sewin. Thus the power was radiated around until it had reached every god and ruler present, after which it was vibrated to the celestial travelers. The great wave of light that had separated them parted on each side, and, without being conscious of any movement, the celestial beings found themselves in the midst of gods and rulers. Perfect harmony reigned, and these mighty personages were as cordial and as kindly in manner to the travellers from the celestial sphere as though they were all of the same rank in power. Then were the celestial travellers made the guests of honour of these gods, while a brilliant panoramic scene of splendour continued for 6 hours. 1,000 beautiful beings, representing the order of the Purple Star, appeared in the symbolic movements of the different degrees. The ceremonies and movements were also very beautiful in the order of the White Iris. This order was represented by 12 of the most spiritually developed beings from the Isle of Harmonia, God's Kingdom, the Kingdom of the Blessed, the Sphere of Supreme Content, the Sphere of Light and Wisdom, the Arcana of Power, and the Realm of Glory. Then came the passing of the Gods of Power, a scene that outrivaled in splendor anything the celestial travelers had before beheld. Chapter 3. A pilgrimage to the infinite land. It seemed to these celestial travelers that existence would hereafter be even a greater blessing than before, for they had been made more conscious than ever of the mighty creative power of the infinite. At the close of these great festivities, the mighty Avanan gave forth this message to the celestial travelers. Daughters of Light, say to the One of Earth, known as Hiram the Cathbatri, when you commingle with him upon the astral, that he shall yet triumph, that his faith is now being tested, and, while there are still some discouragements for him to face, Hem must push himself through them. The goal of his efforts shall be great success, although I say the task he hath been called upon to complete shall not be an easy one, yet it will be worth the while, for the ultimatum shall be for the upliftment and betterment of humanity, and great shall be the reward, and the joy and peace which followeth, after shall be greater than mortal mind hath yet been able to comprehend. Say to the loved one of earth, push on, for while the pathway holds obstructions now, yet a little further beyond the way is clear and the vista reveals a realm of wondrous beauty. The celestial travellers passed from this scene of great splendour, feeling as though they had lived a great many years since passing up into those mighty realms. And there were still many temples to be explored and points of interest to visit. Before passing into the temple of God, they took on their former celestial condition. Their next point of interest was the individual temples, which two of them were to see for the first time. The fact that they were to behold these temples together made the privilege doubly interesting. As they passed out into the atmosphere of God's kingdom, they were greeted on all sides with words of welcome by the inhabitants of that region, who evidently knew that three people from the celestial world were visiting their country. It would seem, from the hospitality they showed and the marked degree of interest manifested, that they considered these three people personages of importance. In the Grove of Promethea, a wonderfully beautiful spot, an affair was to be held in honor of these travelers. They accepted the invitation to be present, and found themselves in a great bower of floral beauty. The trees and shrubbery, whose foliage was of many different kinds and colors, were made more beautiful by festoons of rose blossoms. It was delightful, of course, the gathering in this beautiful grove, where the very air was an inspiration of something sublime. The grandeur of scenes through which they had just passed and the sudden change to scenes of pastoral beauty formed a picture upon the consciousness of the travelers that was marvelously beautiful. The people gathered in the Grove of Promethea were marvelously intellectual. There were no ordinary ones among them, and the language that flowed from them was like liquid music. They were very tall and of fine proportions, and they looked very beautiful. The female beings wore illuminated draperies of various colors that seemed as delicately beautiful as mist. About to be heads and forms of some of them were halos, circles of stars or characters of light, indicative of some rank or honor that had been bestowed upon them. Their faces were marvelously beautiful and their eyes wonderfully clear windows of the soul. The eyes of celestial beings are wonderfully brilliant and beautiful in expression, but they cannot be compared to the eyes of the inhabitants of God's kingdom. The time glided by in a joyous and happy manner, strains of sweet music seemed to float from every direction, and there was a wondrous charm in everything. Every being in that beautiful grove was a representative of great work, and, while all appeared to give themselves up to the pleasures of the hour, they were at the same time directing great movements in different parts of the universe by the power of mind. The minds of these people were so powerful that they could be used in many different directions at the same time without any indication of absent-mindedness. The celestial travelers had been in that realm but a short time to have passed through the wonderful experiences which are here related. Hush, to one of them there came still more wonderful experiences in the kingdom of the blessed, still further beyond in the realms of space. At length the travelers found themselves on their way toward the temples which they had created by the acts and motives of their own lives. They had now reached a part of God's temple where they met but few people. The travelers had developed so much wisdom since passing up into these regions that they were considered competent to act as their own guides. As one had been over the road before, there need he no fear but what they would find the way safely. I may say, however, that the spiritual mind in an unfolded state possesses no degree of fear, and can move to difficult points in space with perfect safety and with a surety that the point desired will be reached. The five temples could he seen for some time before they were reached. To the one who had been there before they seemed larger than on previous occasions. This was true, of course, since everything is revealed in its true light in those mighty realms of space. There was the temple of golden brown, the one of white, the pink temple, and the two of pale silver and gold. This was to be one of the most interesting experiences of the entire trip on account of its personal nature. It was decided that each traveler should visit her own temple first, then they would all enter the temple of the one who had played such an important part in the lives of each of them. The temples all seemed considerably larger than they had on the previous visit, and they apparently were growing rapidly, for as their builders stood and looked at them they could see the upper parts, which looked at first like smoke, gradually take on the form of the lower parts of the buildings, and as they took on form they became luminous, an appearance not manifested in the parts below. Although these individual temples were some distance from each other, there was a pathway which looked like a broad silver ribbon connecting one with the other and extending far up in the ether. It had not occurred to them at first to walk over that pathway, but they did so finally, and the sensation they experienced was wonderfully pleasant and invigorating. 43. Upon the previous visit of Rose the Sunlight to these temples she had noticed a number of very interesting manifestations whose meanings had not been revealed to her, but she had been told that on her third trip these things would be revealed unto her. Emma the Starbeam and Grace the Messenger went on to their temples, and Rose the Sunlight entered hers. On her previous visit the latter had made up her mind that she would build her temple grander and more beautiful than ever before by the motives and acts of her life, and now, as she stood within the structure of her own life, she realized that she had builded well. On her previous visit she had been shown two crystal balls, one blue and one white. The meaning of the blue ball had been revealed to her, but the white one she had been unable to read. Now there was neither blue nor white ball, but a large golden circle, within which the beholder saw herself and the work she would accomplish during the next 1,000 years. It was a marvelous picture, one calculated to fill her mind with joy, for the good she realized she was to accomplish was well worth the efforts she had put forth and would put forth to, I-44, grow toward higher accomplishments and broader realizations. She saw herself with a great work to accomplish in at least 25 different realms of space, the first four of them being the Earth, the Celestial World, God's Kingdom, and the Kingdom of the Blessed. The others were still further beyond in space. She saw that before the 1,000 years had expired one would work with her who was still of the Earth, and also that through their work and influence millions of people upon the Earth would find the way to the light of progression. She saw herself far up on the region known as the Realm of Power as the supreme leader of the people of that particular portion of the infinite world. She knew she would have to climb some to reach that point, but as it was so indicated, she would evidently attain it. It seemed very interesting, the thought of what an earnest woman could accomplish by being brave enough to make the effort to climb toward lofty heights and to carry with her as she went the name of humanity. She saw herself with the one who was to act with her in the years to come in different parts of the universe, terrestrial, celestial, and ethereal. They seemed to be greatly interested in their work, but they had times in which they gave themselves up to the recreations and pleasures of the higher world. The picture seemed very absorbing and fascinating to Rose the Sunlight, and she felt conscious of a stronger desire than ever before to make her work a worthy one. In one part of her temple, Rose the Sunlight could behold the earth and could bring to her vision at once anyone she desired to see. She saw the one with whom she was working on the earth and vibrated a message to him. It seemed that she moved about for a long time through her temple, studying some indications that she saw and gaining new lessons in the realization of infinite love, power, and wisdom. By this time the other travelers had explored their temples, and they met on the outer branch of the pathway leading to the temple of Hiram the Earth Battery. This temple appeared more brilliant in appearance than it had on previous occasions. Upon a previous trip to this temple, four compartments had been shown, each veiling a mystery which would be made clear upon the third, I-46, trip to God's kingdom. The time was now at hand for these mysteries to be revealed. The rose, colored box, the four symbols, the case, and the golden dish were all symbols of experiences that would influence the life of the builder of this temple. They indicated struggle and discouragements, but through these discouragements a plan would be evolved that would result in the establishment of great good for the cause of humanity. The symbols showed a period in the life of this builder where he would be strongly influenced by members of the Masonic Brotherhood who had passed on to broader fields of action. He would be strongly influenced during two very important periods of his life. The first time would be when he prepared a book on masonry. The second time would be in his building and establishing the temple or light, for the Masonic Brotherhood, from the spiritual side of life, would have a part to play in the building of this great temple. The dark case with the three stars was very peculiar. It represented a time when it would seem to this builder that he was moving blindly in the effort to put into operation his plans and ambitions. The three silver stars were symbolic of the loving interest that three angelic beings would manifest toward this life. The stars were also indicative of hope shining through darkness. The case at first was very dark and indicated that there would come a time in the life of this builder when he would almost abandon certain very important things which had been planned to shape his life. Later on, this case grew very bright and led out to a very beautiful scene where two people could be seen who would play a very important part in the life of this builder. The fourth symbol, a large, covered dish of gold, was shown now without the cover. It revealed the crowning period of life, the building of a mighty temple, ultimate wealth, great honor, and the loving companionship of those near and dear to him. A large compartment was taking shape near the top of the building. It was veiled in purple and silver light. What it contained would not be revealed until the next visit to God's kingdom. The three celestial travelers were now met by Hosea, supreme divine ruler of the spheres and God's kingdom, and Jehovah, supreme divine, I-4S, ruler of the kingdom of the blessed and master of the 253rd degree. The beloved Hosea would accompany Emma the Starbeam and Grace Celestia upon their return trip, while Rose the Sunlight would journey to the Kingdom of the Blessed to pass through another weird and fascinating experience. H9, Chapter 4. A Pilgrimage to the Infinite Land. In the Kingdom of the Blessed, in company with the Supreme Divine Ruler of God/S Kingdom, the Greater Vanan, and a retinue of beings of such intense brightness that her vision could not penetrate the powerful light, the celestial traveler known as Rose the Sunlight passed onward and upward through realms of space so far beyond the earth that there were no figures in material language large enough to estimate the height. The space through which she passed was not like earthly atmosphere or ethereal space. As far as she could see, the infinite universe was aglow with the most intense light. It was as though she moved through a sea of wonderful glowing light. Never had she felt so uplifted, and the peace of God which passed understanding was more perfect than it had been in God's kingdom. I-50. This traveler was no larger in appearance than she had been before, but her consciousness had expanded in such a powerful way that she was at least 50 degrees higher in realization, vision, and understanding than she had been before. How glorious, how marvelous life and creation appeared to her, and what a blessing to be alive. She was drawing still closer to the great heart of the infinite, where the God power was apparent in every atom space. It was a strange thought to contemplate, a being who not a great while ago was of the earth, now in the company of the gods of the universe. In order for this being to enter these realms, she was obliged to pass through a most peculiar experience, an experience quite unlike any of previous occasions. Before this time she had been unable to penetrate the aura of light by which the beings were surrounded who accompanied her. She could see them quite distinctly now, however, and beheld in them beings marvelously grand and beautiful. There were 25 of them, and they represented the perfected sex.